It's time to bring in David Tarachuk. It's time for the Media Beat. David joins us on a Friday morning, and we rebroadcast it over the weekend and following our 12 noon news during the week. David is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, has his own terrific website, themediabeat.us, and we're always thrilled to have him join us on a Friday morning. Good morning, David. How are you this morning?
Decisive, Marshall. And I'm joining you from not my usual place in New York City, the media capital of the world, but I'm out of state in Maine once again. And I'm missing, I suppose. This is a typical New York thing, like psychiatrists in New York who disappear in August for their traditional vacation. It's when people have their breakdowns. Well, I'm a newsman, and I'm out of state, and guess what? The biggest story in the country for many people is a New York State story. Our governor in big trouble, it seems.
You know, the more this happens, the more you just don't understand how things like this can develop. You're taking intelligent people, obviously intelligent people, whether you agree with their politics or not. You're taking people that are out and dealing with the public all the time. They're aware of media coverage. They're aware of now what's right and wrong, especially over the past couple of years, where once again, when I was a kid, I was always taught whatever you do when you're a youngster can always come back to bite you in the rear end when you're an adult and you're going for a good job and all of a sudden something turns up. And then you have the governor of the state of New York, who's got a brother who's a TV anchor person, does that. But more important, you have a father that has a legacy that is simply amazing in the state of New York. And, you know, you don't like to prejudge somebody, but you can't help but look at this situation after the attorney general in New York takes months to look into this. These accusations are just stunningly bad, not only for the Cuomo family, but also for the state of New York. And people that look at politicians, and this gives them more rights, I guess, or understanding to doubt everything that politicians do.
Well, yes, and it's intriguing to note, of course, that this time last year, that same governor, Andrew Cuomo, had a hugely positive rating in opinion polls for his handling of the, or his apparent handling, apparently confident and determined handling of the COVID crisis. He was in amongst many people, and I find it rather strange at the time. I remember thinking what a peculiar bit of hero worship was going on for the governor's daily briefings that he would give or televise. And as you say, you know, he gets a lot of pretty high-quality media advice, not least from his brother, and maybe we'll talk about the ethics involved there, since his brother is such a major figure in a cable news network, CNN. But the governor himself was riding high, and it's very interesting to see that in the wake of, not only his own attorney general's damning report on him, I was going to say it was pretty damning, but I think I have to say it's greatly damning. It's a very well cased report. The attorney general's investigation into sexual harassment of 11 women, cases that are thoroughly documented in this document, and it's extraordinary to see the fall from grace that's happened in those 12 months. But of course, we must never forget the capacity that powerful people, and powerful men especially, it seems, can develop a sense of insulation from scrutiny, and a sense of their untrammeled power, and in certain kinds of men, I suppose, they really do believe they can get away with anything, and it's not the case, of course. Ultimately, I mean, I guess in some instances, people do get away with things. Of course, they do. It happens all the time, but so publicly evident, and in this case, so thoroughly in the end, although there's been lots of concern about the intimidation of people who would be otherwise prepared to give evidence. That's a large part of the Attorney General's report, that people who were the alleged victims of his unwelcome attentions didn't want to report things because they were scared of recrimination, and they had good reason to be. That's well documented in this report too. The efforts made by people surrounding the governor, including, it is suggested, his brother, giving him media advice, but much of the advice being given to him was to aggressively attack the character and the record of the people who were giving evidence against him. The very thing that, of course, he's being accused of, or one of the many things he's being accused of. And at the same time, of course, we mustn't forget that the legislature of New York State has been investigating him in parallel with this, and a rather wider investigation in the case of the Assembly. They're looking into some of the previously hidden aspects of his COVID management, the fact that the death count in nursing homes in New York State was being allegedly manipulated by him and his staff to keep the numbers down, where in fact the numbers were going up, and other aspects of his misgovernment, you might call it, in matters like using New York State's staff, unpaid for this extra effort, to help him write the best-selling book that he produced on the basis of his handling of the COVID crisis. And a matter which is somewhat emblematic of his self-centeredness, I guess, the fact that, the alleged fact that he was also engaged in covering up the facts in another matter entirely, but one very close to his heart, it seems, and closely involved in that familial aspect of his character that you mentioned earlier. The fact that the Mario Cuomo Bridge, named after his father, brand new to replace the old, in its time, much-loved bridge over the River Hudson, the Tappan Zee Bridge, that those faults were concealed initially, and the governor's role in that has been investigated by the state as well. But it seems now that given the intense concentration by the Attorney General and the sexual charges, then you've got a great rush now by the Assembly and a decision really to concentrate on these sexual matters purely and get ready in a very expeditious way for an impeachment. And it looks now they're demanding answers from the governor's side. The Assembly wants an answer to the charges within, by the end of next week. So clearly the pace is picking up, and the Assembly is determined to move in that direction. A sense of impunity, I think, was evident in the governor before, and now perhaps we're seeing that severely challenged by the institutions of his own state government.
And what about the report that I also went on to really appreciate? It was not only the Attorney General fault the governor, but his entire close staff, and that they set up basically parameters that really allowed this to happen and continue.
Yeah, absolutely, and we mustn't forget also that there's a potentially a criminal dimension to this too. The attorney generals of the district attorneys of various counties, of New York City inevitably, or Manhattan specifically, because some of these alleged offenses took place in that jurisdiction, and Albany, of course, the capital of New York, it has its own district attorney too, are assembling their own set of charges, and two other counties, their district attorneys want the investigative materials that the state attorney general used in her report. So clearly, there's a marshalling of, if you pardon the word, a marshalling of evidence in the criminal field too. So he's in deep trouble. I think that's inevitable to say, and it's going to be a rough. It's a rough few weeks ahead for Andrew Cuomo.
All right. Now I know that you would like to recognize some good reporting, so we're gonna play our fanfare sound, okay?
Yeah, please.
We need it after this. I could
do that. Yeah, we need to look upwards, right? Yeah, let's hear the fanfare for this week. I want to draw attention to some good journalistic work by an area of journalism that doesn't really get its due a lot of the time. I want to highlight the Associated Press, the wire service. It's often overlooked, I'm afraid, when people consider the field of journalism. But, I mean, they're often regarded, the workers of AP, as the foot soldiers of journalism, and as often, of course, foot soldiers don't always get the recognition they deserve. But the AP has done something really sensible this last week. It combined two of its specialists, Brian Slodisco, who covers the U.S. Congress. He's their main man in the Capitol, and Jim Salter, who's their main man for the state of Missouri. Together they did a very fine piece of reporting, a background piece on the biography of Congresswoman Cori Bush from Missouri. And they've told a story which is really significant for our present times, and almost sort of emblematic of I don't want to make the comparison too overt, but as you say, this is an opportunity for us to look upward. Cori Bush is an elected representative who is quite different from the kind of person we've just been talking about. Cori Bush was being credited this last week, not least by the Senate leader, another New York figure, of course, Chuck Schumer, for helping get through the extension, or at least the imposition of a new moratorium against evictions in this COVID crisis time. And that was achieved largely because the Senate leader has said the efforts of Congresswoman Cori Bush. She's a woman who knows homelessness, knows eviction specifically very well. She and her then husband and two children were evicted from their home in Missouri. And spent a good long time, or a bad long time perhaps, living in their Ford SUV. And that experience has clearly been seminally influential on her career since. In fact, what happened in her personal life is that the marriage did not survive this crisis. She then went back to school, gained nursing credentials, worked as a nurse, and then was prompted by events in her state, in Ferguson, Missouri, in fact, on the outskirts of St. Louis, prompted by the death of Michael Brown, at the hands of the police, and began protesting and engaging in active calls for change in Missouri policing, to great effect, of course, and moved on from that to run for office. She eventually became a congresswoman and is now occupying that position to great effect. And what does she do when the CDC moratorium against against evictions expired last week. She slept outdoors on the steps of the Capitol with a good few other supporters doing the same. And that was, a very dramatic piece of activism in a good American tradition, and helped to, as Schumer said, focus the nation's attention on this issue and help them argue the case through, especially with the White House, who felt that because of a Supreme Court ruling recently, that they didn't have any chance of renewing the CDC moratorium, but with the White House turning under this kind of glaring pressure, turning to fresh legal advice, and then deciding that, if we can't renew the moratorium, let's create a new one on slightly different terms, and in this case, aligning it perfectly, in a perfectly sensible piece of emphasis, focusing it entirely on areas of the country where the Delta variant of COVID has meant that cases are peaking again, which of course turns out to be a very considerable majority of the United States territory anyway. So in effect, the moratorium is to all intents and purposes reinstated, just as Cori Bush wanted.
And what's interesting about her protest is, and it did spur President Biden to make a bold move, which is basically allow the CDC to extend this and basically say, in all intents and purposes, well, at least this will give us several months before maybe the Supreme Court knocks it back down again. I mean, I think that is
a by some time.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And in the meanwhile, prepare perhaps a fuller effort at all the other things that are needed, as well as these stopgap measures, and maybe we'll get something more fundamental brought in to ensure that people aren't forced into situations which of course are conducive to faster spread of the disease.
Taking a look at other stories that are out there, there's a story that I think we all knew, anybody in the media knew, was not going to go away in 1 year or 2 years, but probably be around for many years, and that is the changing face of COVID, the changing facts of COVID, because as COVID develops and more strains develops, science has to change and develop with it. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this will all work out when you add in the politics as we head into the winter of 2021.
Sure. The CDC's internal documents, as we were talking about last week, now talk about, I never particularly like the military metaphors that are used, but I think this is such an extreme case that it's warranted. We are at war with the virus, and what is very clear, as the internal document that the Washington Post got hold of last week, it's very clear that, as that report says, at least the internal document explaining the need for a change of strategy, is that we're dealing with a new enemy. The war is now conducted against a disease which is very different, significantly different from what it was when we first encountered it in the early days of 2020. The Delta variant is so much more transmissible, and it seems to be responsible for a greater number of the still small but troubling instances of breakthrough infections, managing to get through, in one case out of 100, to use a rough figure, for people who have been vaccinated. So it's still possible for the disease to spread, even using people who have been vaccinated as a kind of vector. So clearly, Like all viruses, it means business, and it's going to do everything it can to change its character and change its fierceness and its capacity for moving on in order to take to wreak the havoc that it's designed to wreak. And the CDC and every other piece of the if you like, the armed forces of the United States marshaled against the disease are going to be needed. And every time, as in the case of the moratorium on evictions, that you can buy time to reassess and rebuild your own forces against the disease, then that's all welcome and all very necessary. And we're getting lots of very good scientific reporting on this, on the changes that have been taking place too. I draw listeners' attention to the science writing in the Atlantic magazine, for instance. You will see a very clear exposition of what is different about the Delta variant and why it is so necessary to take the extra measures that are being urged now by even by Republican governors in red states. That's very noticeable that's happening now. So a whole new set of measures, a whole new mood of determination is necessary now to beat back the changed enemy, because the enemy certainly has changed.
And it's interesting that the Secretary of Defense finally moved, and seeing as soldiers are vaccinated all the time, members of the U.S. military are now going to include COVID vaccinations along with every other vaccination. What's interesting, David, and I wanted to get your take on this. I think that the CDC, the WHO, all these health organizations need to look back at the way they reported to the public on this from the very beginning and come up with a way where it doesn't appear like either they're lying or they don't know. It's hard in today's social media atmosphere for the WHO or for the CDC to gain confidence and to gain a foothold. I think they all have to review the way they want to make public certain things and how they make it public.
Sure. Public health and global public health is a notoriously difficult area to operate in because, of course, you're dealing with very complex issues. And it's not just complex because, in a particular country, the United States, for instance, you have certain, beliefs and traditions and conventions that almost cut against the very concept of public health. For many other countries, it's less of an issue. Public health measures, inevitably, because you're dealing with that very concept, public health, often require sweeping measures which don't take much account of individual preferences. And yet you're dealing with a body politic in the United States, for and in a few other countries too, where the idea of a central government telling us what to do with our own bodies is somehow anathema. So you've got that kind of tension built into the entire equation. And what you've got in a world where social media, which of course is guaranteed to concentrate on the most emotional and disturbing and sort of angry-making hot issues, you're going to find it very difficult to try and put in place and mobilize mass public action. In a sense, there's always going to be a tension between those two things, individual liberties on the one hand and a need for public health. The rather clumsy analogy I draw often and have done in this program when we've been talking is with car safety belts. The huge, protests that were, consequent on the passing of laws some time ago about making it mandatory for people to wear seatbelts. I mean, that was an argument at one point, but it's been settled because the idea of public safety in that case overwhelmed the emphasis on personal liberty. And in a sense, you're looking at every point, if you're a public health official now, for ways in which to get people behind the idea of public health being more important than anything else in this particular crisis. And that's the main thrust of every new public health measure, whether it's trying to get people either by making it compulsory or making every kind of making available every kind of inducement you can, whether it's cash or making sure that your job is secure if you get vaccinated. All these measures are there and are being pursued in the hope ultimately of getting people to see that the public good is that much more important than any individual liberties you might be somehow offending against.
So many stories, so many days, so little time, David. We appreciate you. So you're going to stay in Maine one more week?
Absolutely. We'll be here next week, too.
That's a smart thing to do, David. We'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to it.
Take care. David Tarachuk with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. Of course, his website, themediabeat.us.